Coach Art Hircus. Our first coaching guest of the day is Brian Kelly. No stranger here, and we are glad to see you. And I never want to add more pressure to your job, but everywhere I go, they are fired up about the Tigers this year.
And I am too. I mean, I'm bullish on this team as well. And look, every coach that's here believes they've got the best team they've ever had. You know, so you come leave these meetings, Paul, and you think, is there a chance I could win a game? But we know our roster. This is the best roster that we've put together. It's part of
the best roster LSU has put together. That is what Brian Kelly said. Now, I'm going to let you decide in the comment section at the end of this video or in our live chat right now. If you're listening to this via iTunes or Spotify, I want you to hit me up on social media at PowerHourLSU. Is this Brian Kelly's best roster yet? I don't know if I could get there as this being their best roster. I would always say that one of the best LSU rosters ever was the Jaden Daniels roster of 2023, where you had one of the best quarterback, wide receiver, tight end quadruplets, if you will, in LSU history. It was just the defense was terrible. But I would say that that defensive roster were still really good. The truth, though, is while that is more of a semantics thing, do I truly believe Brian Kelly has put together an elite roster? I do. The reason, though, I would say LSU is not as good of a roster then is because of the single most important position that we know of in college football, which is the offensive line. We have talked about this quite a bit ad nauseum. You have got to have an elite offensive line to win the whole shebang. And I don't know if LSU has that. I don't. They had four offensive linemen drafted last year, and they still weren't a good offensive line. Well, I felt they were fine. Pass blocking wise, they were overall fine. So I don't know if I would consider this the best roster that he has had, but everything else that Brian Kelly has said up to this point is right on the money. I did an entire live stream before he even spoke yesterday in Destin, or today in Destin, about how I appreciate Brian Kelly's boldness. And he actually took it one step further. So we're going to play a little bit more of this Paul Feinbaum interview. And the big thing that Brian Kelly talked about today was making the schedule harder. He wants there to be a permanent Big Ten team that you play every year. And it might not be necessarily permanent as in a specific team, but every year an SEC team plays a Big Ten team. I would somewhat be open to that. But overall, Brian Kelly has walked around Destin over not only this year, that was the point of the live stream yesterday. The past couple of years, Brian Kelly has said, we have got to play a harder schedule. We are the SEC, and he has not backed down.
A process that has taken a little more time than we wanted, but we're doing it the right way, and we're pretty excited about what our football team looks like.
And I mean, it starts with Garrett Nussmeier. Yeah. I alluded to him off the air to you about you know, his season. I mean, there were some really great moments. There were some awkward moments, yep, as there always are. What I'm in a different state, in a different, yep, time zone. What has changed with him, or is it just the maturation and the people and the pieces around him?
I think you're right. I think it's the maturation. I think weapons around him obviously make a big difference. And I think in this league, as you know, being a first-time starter is so difficult. So difficult. And his ability to overcome some of the setbacks that he had when our last three games where he really played at a high level, that's going to continue. He had a great spring. He got a chance to really blend with the new receivers that we have and the weapons that we've added. I just think he's going to have a great year going into year two.
I know you're interested in how he plays this year and obviously his future, but in talking to some NFL people, I know you talk to a lot more, yeah, than I do. I mean, they love him.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think we all know about his background, right? He's a coach's son. He's somebody that's been around the game. So I think when you look at quarterbacks, you want to see that kind of football IQ. He's a learner of the game. He always is looking to be curious about something new. Then he's got arm talent. and anticipation. He can make those tight window throws that the NFL coaches really, really like, and GMs. I just think that, you know, he's the complete package when it comes to that.
And he's handled the cauldron of fire. And I say this, I know you're a man, you're a believer, but somebody must not like you, because you end up with the worst opening games of anybody I've ever seen.
Because I think, as I remind Scott about that, Scott, this was not on your tenure. You didn't make these decisions, but let's not make them moving forward. No, look, it is a challenge. There's no doubt. But everybody's got challenges. And now we have to rise up to that challenge of playing a great team. And Dabo's done an incredible job there. And this could be one of the most talented teams he's had. But we believe that we put a football team together that can go on the road. And when you go on the road, Paul, in this league, you got to be better defensively. And that's really the key here. We are going to be better defensively. Blake has got some weapons now on the defensive side of the ball. And when you go into a place like Clemson, you better play really good defense.
And as we talk about that game, and there'll be a million conversations, what does it mean? What happens if this happens? But it does lead to the bigger picture, which I know we have beaten to death, but the playoff, you're part of that conversation. Yep. As one of the top coaches in America. What is there something you would like to see happen with when this all unfolds?
To me, you know, when I was at Notre Dame, we played for the national championship, and it was the old system. It was done by a computer. Today, it's very subjective. What we'd like to see is maybe a combination of some of the analytics, some of the strength of schedule components. I know a lot of people use RPI. We probably couldn't use an RPI because we just don't have enough body of work in terms of games. But if we could blend those two together so the selection process is a lot cleaner relative to who should be in and who shouldn't be in, I think we started that with straight seating. I think that was a first iteration of where we need to be. I think we can streamline it a little bit more with more data. And I think the more data that we have, so you're not just looking at the right-hand column.
Okay.
It can't just be about that. It's got to be about the best football team.
And that seemed to be the frustration of a lot of people, including the commissioner, where comparing one school to another.
Before we get to this next question, I do agree with that. But how do you determine which analytics to use when it comes to determining who the best teams are? So even when you have a computer involved in this, it's also subjective, right? Because someone has to subjectively decide which inputs to use. But overall, I'm certainly open to more computer-ish type of variables into the college football playoff formula.
Other in another league, is this absurd?
No, you have to be able to look at other factors. And I think that's what I'm getting to with you, is that if we can add a little bit of the metrics, if you will, with subjective decisions, I think we find a better place.
I want to talk about you for just a second, because your career is extraordinary. Everyone has pointed to various points in time with championships at different levels and playing for the national championship. But you experienced some things last year that you've felt before, but I mean, they had to be difficult because everybody had an opinion, and that's what makes it great. But LSU fans, I think, have more opinions than any fan base I've ever run into.
You know, look, I knew what I was getting into, right? The expectations that we have here at LSU are real, and they should be there. We should have high expectations. And we struggled, there's no doubt. But we got out of that, and that's what you're looking for. You want to see a team that is coming together. What I see every day is not what everybody else does.
Right.
I see the culture of our team. I see how they're working. I see the development. And then putting the roster together, adding NIL to go out and get the top portal class in the country. I see those things happening. So, yeah, there were some rough spots along the way. But we knew where we were going. We knew what the vision was. And we feel like we're getting right on the cusp of having a great football team.
When you've been through it before, when you know what you're building, and the noise is still filtering in, and I'm sure you can be insulated to a point, but you're – family can't be.
Sure.
What do you, is it, I mean, it's not the first time this conversation has happened.
No. And listen, you're at a high profile place like Notre Dame for, I was there longer than anybody. And so when you get that kind of noise, you're trying to tell your team to avoid the noise. You have to do it by the leadership and how you come to work every day. They have to have a consistency. So when I go through that door, they know that I've got their back and that no matter what happens, we're going to stick together. And that's what we did this year. We had a rough spot. We came out of it and won our last three games. And that's what you're looking for. Avoid the noise, stick to the plan, stick to our process. That's how I get through it. And my family understands that too. I just have to remind them a little bit more.
I mean, do they say,
so there you go. Really good interview, of course, with Paul Feinbaum. I have had the good fortune of being a guest on the Paul Feinbaum show. And in fact, somebody actually went on Feinbaum and said, hey, potential guest, Carter. It was a young man named Jackson, and I appreciate that, old Jackson. But bottom line, that interview was great. The big clip, though, was Brian Kelly saying, hey, we should play a Big Ten team every year. If we are moving towards the SEC and the Big Ten being the Big Two, which they already have been basically, along with the, you know, a few ACC teams mixed in there, we should play a Big Ten school every single year. So this is why college football is just so different, because every last little game you play matters so much. It is the sport that generates the most revenue that also has the fewest amount of games, right? It's a beautiful example of scarcity. I would love a Big Ten opponent being on the schedule every year. I would love to play a home-and-home with Ohio State, even though that would be a very difficult game. We already have had difficult enough season openers and just early season games in and of itself. But an SEC Big Ten challenge would generate a lot of interest. I also think it would generate a lot of neutral interest as well. In other words, growing the sport. It would have its name, right? Its own branding. It would obviously make these matchups more national. Imagine us having to play Oregon in a home and home. That would be wonderful for both schools. But more importantly, it would be wonderful for college football as a whole. And obviously, Oregon doesn't want any of this smoke because Tyrann Mathieu happened the last time around. But it goes to show you how few games you actually have and how every single slot matters so much. All right. So, obviously, a little bit of a different intro. I have been praising Brian Kelly a lot. I got a text yesterday from someone that I adore that is well within the walls of LSU, St. Carter. It's been weird. You have only complimented Brian Kelly this week. And I feel like, for the most part, I am pro-BK, but I am critical, I feel like, a fair amount in his direction because of us not being in a playoff yet through three seasons. So I do think, though, out of everything he said with Paul, out of everything he has said as far as scheduling and playing difficult opponents and all of that, for you to come out and say that this is your best roster, what you have to do is make the playoff. Now, I did see my first national analyst that did not have LSU in the playoff, and that is friend of the channel, Andy Staples. Did not have LSU in the playoff. I'm going to text Andy, try and get him on the show this week. Okay. We say hi to Tony, Freddie, LA Mom. Good to see you guys in the chat. Tomorrow night, we will have a guest from the inner walls of UALR baseball. So we'll dive deep into a regional preview tomorrow. Football is so low on the totem pole as far as things of immediate importance. But to me, it's always the big thing. Okay, so we'll talk a lot of LSU baseball. There is something I do have to do later this evening, so we're not going to go live super long. Normally, our Wednesday live streams are a little bit shorter, but we want to thank all our partners really quickly. Fast Draft Fantasy, in particular, please go sign up. Please go use my promo code Carter. Fantasy football done at a completely different level. You would love it. Okay, Zion Imaging, NOPOD, and so on and so on and so on. Okay. You know, for me, as we move one step closer to Clemson, it's the thing that is the immediate future. I understand me giving Brian Kelly a lot of credit for playing a difficult schedule or being the most open out of anybody in the SEC for playing a more difficult schedule. It's kind of counterintuitive over the argument of LSU moving away or me wanting them to move away from playing difficult season openers. And those two things could be true at once. I am more so complimenting LSU for being fearless, while the rest of the SEC is wanting basically participation trophies and things that they want in return of playing an extra conference game and so on and so on. But one other thing that you have to do if you are an SEC fan, and this is just my way of describing this. So College Football Nerds Area, College Football Channel, they do really good breakdowns. I have disagreed with a lot that they have said, but the way that they viewed how the college football season happened last year coincides with how I view it. All the way down to who the three best teams were last year in college football. Ohio State, Oregon, and then Ole Miss to me was clearly the third best team in college football. Clearly. They just lost games that they should not have lost. They lost, obviously, a close one to us where they dominated the line of scrimmage, but we were clutch. Garrett Nussmeier was clutch. Our defense was clutch. They lost to Kentucky. That was the choke job of the century. Kentucky ended up not winning another SEC game. That is entirely on them. And they got a little unlucky that the DJ Lagway experiment at Florida had just been underway. And as we know very well, that Florida team towards the end of the season was one of college football's top 25 teams. So a school like Texas did not have to play DJ Lagway, but a school like Ole Miss and LSU had to. Some injury luck mixed in there. So you look at Ole Miss, they won every game by double digits. All right. I watched a decent amount of Indiana football last year. And by the eye test, I could tell you that Ole Miss would have skull-drug Indiana last year. They would have absolutely positively demolished them, as they would with SMU. And SMU and Indiana both got into the college football playoff. And you can even make an argument Boise State also got into the college football playoff off a very weak schedules compared to an SEC schedule. All right. Boise State should have for sure been in it. I'm a big believer in keeping the best non-P4 champion into the field. I think that's a really good thing for the sport. But what do you do with Indiana and SMU? Two teams that, you know, was able to pass by with weaker schedules, and two teams that got absolutely mollywopped in the playoff. Indiana was destroyed by Notre Dame, despite what the score would tell you, and SMU got absolutely destroyed by Penn State, who then got to play Boise State, who they also destroyed. And then Penn State, embarrassingly, versus Notre Dame, could not complete a pass to a receiver. So, yes, my SEC bias would tell you that, in particular, Ole Miss, but even South Carolina was probably a better team than those other teams that made it. All right. The problem, though, is that the schedules in your own conference aren't fair enough. And just by adding one extra conference game, it would even it out quite a bit. Texas and Tennessee's schedule ended up being way easier than the schedule that Ole Miss and South Carolina had to play. Texas and Tennessee did not have to face LSU and Garrett Nussmeier. They did not have to play Ole Miss. They did not have to play South Carolina. And it showed. It showed. So Texas, to me, was actually the best SEC team last year, in my opinion. But Tennessee was not. So the nine-game conference schedule, we get into so many debates about Ole Miss should have been in, which I firmly do believe they should have been in over SMU. But the problem is we don't have our own shit figured out. Our own schedules are not figured out. They're not even. You have 16 teams in your conference. You cannot have 16 teams in your conference, which means you exist, and 15 other teams in your conference exist. And that means if you play 8 conference games, you're barely playing half of the conference every year. So we went from a really bad scheduling format where you had the permanent cross-division rival and you had the divisions to now a worse one where they made up an 8-game conference schedule and they decided to just flip it this year to try and figure it out. So while I agree with college football nerds that what bared out in the playoff was something that I expected, I could also make a very strong argument that I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Indiana getting in with only one loss in the Big Ten. It is not Indiana's fault that Washington fell off a cliff. It is not Indiana's fault that Michigan fell off a cliff. If those programs were at normal strength, Indiana is probably losing one of those two games. So it was a very weak year for the middle of the Big Ten. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think it's going to get better for them there. And what the rest of college football needs to realize is that it is going to be virtually near impossible for the SEC, the top half of the SEC, to pull away from everybody else. It is going to be so hard because every team in the SEC has money set aside for football. And if every team in the SEC has money set aside for football, that means every team in the SEC is going to more than likely have good quarterback play. And I can make a strong case that every team in the Southeastern Conference has good quarterback play, or at the very least, competent quarterback play. I just want you, as an LSU fan, watching this today, right now, just go back and look at all the absolute hot dog water quarterbacks we played, even in 2019. That just does not exist anymore. You're no longer playing the random true freshman quarterbacks unless there is an injury. Every team is going to have a quarterback more than likely making 7 figures to start at their school. It is too big of a liability to not have either a highly ranked guy or someone with some experience. In fact, it is dangerous to not have a backup with some of that, right? That's why LSU went out there and got Michael Van Buren. So it's going to continue to be a problem for the SEC and the scheduling and all of that. But that's what you sign up for. That's what you get. Every single coach, when they sign on the dotted line to be in this conference, you know what you're signing up for. If you don't want to be in it, go join the Big 12. They would happily trade BYU for most SEC schools right now. Go to the Big 12. They'll welcome you with open arms. Okay? We signed to Drunk V, NDB Georgia, the SEC champ in New Orleans. Yes. And the reason why they won that game comfortably is because of an outdated SEC championship game. All right. I will be the first to tell you that of the SEC YouTubers, where I do this channel, I do Power Hour SEC, and I also do Power Hour NFL. But of the ones who do SEC content every single day, I will be the most critical of the SEC. I do think SEC media can be a little too soft. I really do think so. You've got to understand that it just being the SEC Invitational, that is a college football playoff format, it's going to suck dry what makes the sport great. And I know I wax poetic about it all the time. Sure, a wider playoff field very heavily helps LSU. We are rarely the best team in the SEC. In fact, we are rarely the second best team in the SEC. But we are rarely outside of the top five in the SEC. So, a five-team SEC in a 16-team playoff format, that heavily favors us. Let's just say there was a 16-team playoff this year. And we had all these transfers come in. We have a young offensive line. And let's just say we lost three games. But we found a way to be team number 16. There is a very real possibility that that LSU team gets hot. A very, very real possibility. LSU under Brian Kelly has been a slower starting but strong finishing team. That's basically what we've been. So that would very much benefit us, but I'm also against it. Okay. Let's go to Graylin, who's been with me for a while. I appreciate all your super chats, your support. There's 1,000 LSU shows that do Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., but you choose mine. I really appreciate each and every one of you watching this today. I don't disagree that playing 8 of 16 isn't good, but playing 9 of 18 in the big is no better. Okay. So it's a very good comment. And it gets into a very fun philosophical debate. The Big Ten plays 9 conference games. They do. 9 conference games. Obviously, you could have taken that as non. All right. 9 conference games. I do think a Big Ten 9 conference game schedule equates to some of the 8 game conference schedules that are played in the SEC. All right, let me explain. By adding 2 teams to the conference and only playing an 8 game conference schedule, you are able to avoid so many good teams just by the luck of the draw. All right. So let's just use Alexander's point. Bring back divisions in the super conferences. That would honestly be the simplest way to determine this. Okay. You play, the SEC is divided up into the East and the West, or whatever you want to do. And you play those same schools every year. And then the winner of that division plays the winner of the other division in the SEC championship game. And that determines who your champion is. That's one way of doing it. That's not the direction I would go, but it would make common sense. But obviously the SEC is not going to want to do that. And I totally understand why they would not want to do that. All right. Now, a few other things that's been discussed at SEC Media Days. And I've had a night to sleep on what Kirby had to say about the transfer portal window being in January. That's grown on me. I've shared plenty of times. I'm a Kirby guy. I think he's the best coach in the SEC at this point. You can make a case for Heupel, Lane, and a few others. But I do think Kirby Smart is onto something with there only being one transfer portal window. I would prefer it to be in the spring, honestly, but I can understand it being in January as well. The one thing, though, that I would say, Curry also is talking about how some schools are able to pay high school recruits to stay committed, just committed. If you commit, the earlier you commit, we'll give you $20,000 every month that you're committed to us. But if you don't end up signing with us, you have to give the money back. As a high school kid, I'm doing that. You're telling me I can make an easy 20K by not doing a damn thing? And Kirby was complaining about that. I do think that part of what makes these SEC meetings such a mess is that there's just so much going on during this SEC meetings. And I know we say that every single year, but it makes it so much harder to get a lot of things done. And I speak as someone who does a lot of different things. It's hard. It is hard to be productive when you're doing a lot of different things. You got a lot of different projects. Earlier today, met with a bar owner who wants me to do a DJ set at his bar. Okay, so I had to leave what I was doing, which was a Jaden Knott film study, the running back transfer from Oklahoma. Go there, get in music mode. Wasn't even that long of a meeting. And then I get back and I'm like, man, if I do this, how much money do I want? How do I want the set to sound? And then I'm like, okay, I got to turn this off and now focus in on doing a great show for you guys. And I feel like that's part of the difficulties going on at SEC meetings. You got to fix the portal windows. You got to fix the house settlements. You got to fix the scheduling format. You got to fix the playoff. You got to fix the automatic qualifiers. You have to balance you being better than the other conferences. It's difficult. It's very difficult to do. Yeah, Sam makes a good point here. I cannot stress enough. Cannot stress enough. That if I were to rank the biggest issues, and for those listening via podcast, money to commit seems like a money trap, especially for underprivileged kids. Some parents would abuse that, and a university would have to make an example. Okay. If I were to rank what the biggest problems have been in the NIL era, I could make a very strong argument that parents are number one. I could make a very strong argument. Not the players, not the coaches, not the collectives, parents. And I do think if you were to peel back the layers of the onion of all the big NIL disputes, 90% of them would be involving a parent going crazy, wanting the absolute most money. Okay. Now, here's what you're going to do. Next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this thing going. Let's see here. Shout out to Whit Weeks and Harold Perkins are on a watch list for best linebackers in the country. That's good. Anthony Ianson moves up the rankings of best prospects. So shout out to him. This comes in via Twitter. What do you think of Lane Kiffin's 16-team? Richard, good to see you. 16-team format where you just put the 16 best teams in the playoff. No automatic qualifiers. Not a fan. Not a fan. There needs to be some structure. No. Xavion will play a lot of wide receiver and be very good at it. But will he get carries at running back? Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Nate Ackenhausen. He is very underrated in LSU baseball lore. Made it to AAA. Good stuff. Yeah, Blanche there. It is interesting. That's why they're trying to figure out this Harold Perkins kind of star situation, because Harold Perkins and Whit Weeks, they're not the best pairing based on their styles of play, because they are very similar players. Witt is obviously the better traditional off-ball linebacker, and Harold is the better edge rusher and probably overall playmaker, if you will. But based on recent form, Whit Weeks is better. Could they exist on the field together at the same time? They could, but I do think overall, if I were Blake Baker, I would lend itself to the idea that I would want less aggression from my defense. And that is something that, you know, kind of drives me crazy, because if you were to listen to most defensive coordinators, they always say that if a reporter just asks, hey, what do you want people to think of when they see your defense? Well, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to fly to the football. Well, one of those two things are good. You always want to fly to the football. You do. But aggression isn't always the best. You can run yourself out of gaps. You can run yourself out of holes where you need to be. Okay. Let's go to Doc. He says, who do you think starts in the middle of the defense at linebacker? Well, Whit Weeks will definitely start. And I do think he has a very, very high likelihood of getting number 18. Okay. So he'll start. And obviously, LSU has had other linebackers, you know, wear 18. Some that were extremely, extremely productive. Others, you know, kind of disappointing. But whatever the case may be, Whit Weeks, I think we'll have a DeMond Clark type of year. I do. You know, one of my biggest calls before last season, and it was not only here, but I said it on Blake's show, my biggest prediction of the best non-starter on this LSU team would be Whit Weeks. And that turned out to be true from the USC game to the end of the season. The problem with Witt, though, is some of the rough games were rough. All right. The the good games were very, very good, very explosive. Obviously, Ole Miss and Arkansas really stand out in that department. So a little bit more down-to-down consistency would be nice. But normally, if you are starting a true freshman at linebacker by week three, like what Weeks did, that player is normally going to be a pretty good player. Let's go to Alexander. Leader in sacks and interceptions. So I think the most popular pick for a leader in sacks would be Patrick Payton. But he's not pass rushing isn't necessarily his best trait. You know, he reminds me so much of Barkevious Mingo. He really does. Where he is a long, lean, bendy edge rusher, but not necessarily an elite pass rusher. What they do, though, is they disrupt the game with deflections, which is what Patrick Payton does. Mingo is more of a run and chase guy. So I think Patrick Payton would be the most popular pick. I do think the best defensive end on this team is Jack Pyburn. I do. I also like the fact that a guy like Gabriel Relaford gives you a lot of flexibility. Same thing with the transfer from Nebraska, Jamari Butler, who is a really good pass rusher from a defensive tackle position, even though he's a defensive end. They line him up in Nebraska. They put him over the offensive guard quite a bit, and he made a lot of plays. So I really appreciate your super chat. So leader in sacks, we'll go with Payton for now. Interceptions, we'll go Delane. Yes, he will. Keep number 7, Harold Perkins. Okay. A more talented, deeper defensive line will help Blake Baker's D as much as a better secondary. Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, we'll take a few more. This is my favorite thing, honestly, is just chatting about actual ball. All that other mumbo jumbo. Don't forget, Fast Draft Fantasy, promo code Carter. I do think LSU makes the College World Series. I also think Jay Johnson is telling all his players to get off social media, because every single prognosticator is pointing to LSU's road to Omaha being very favorable. No P4 teams in your region here. UALR is probably the worst team in the whole tournament. And everyone's pointing this out. You know, you go by RPI and these D1 power rankings. LSU got a very favorable regional. I know Jay Johnson is hating that. Not from an actual matchup standpoint, but he does not want his players reading that. Okay. But yes, we will have a ULR guest tomorrow. Nathan says, are we doing away with number 7 this year? No. It'll be around. Emma Cat says, we need Perk to be our dedicated QB spy next year. Yeah. Let's go to LA Bomb. Let me expound on this. This is part of the problem, okay? Is that nobody really knows how to use Harold Perkins best. Nobody, okay? Anyone who claims they think they know, really don't know, okay? Let's see here. Oh, okay, in baseball. Okay, I was about to say. Football.
I did see the guy from Saturday Down South
predicted LSU to win the national championship. I saw that from SDS, Connor O'Gara. Interesting. There we go. Yeah, do I think LSU is going to win it all this year? Yes, I do. I do. Let's go to Blanche. What do I think about all the Oklahoma hype? I love talking about the Sooners. It's kind of become an occupation, if you will. I just released a Jaden Ott film study. All right, not to be confused with the legendary GOAT of LSU media, the sharpest sports betting analyst in all Louisiana, the Ott father, the godfather of LSU media, the man who's been doing it so long, nobody knows how he's done it. The tennis aficionado, Mr. Jimmy Ott. Not to be confused with the Otter. But Jaden Ott is so interesting to me. So he's the running back that transfers over. All the hype is on John Mateer, the quarterback. He was the number one quarterback in the portal this cycle. He comes over from Washington State. And Jaden Ott to me is a more interesting guy because I think Mateer will be fine. Jaden Ott, true freshman season, bang, 274-yard game as a true freshman, which is ridiculous. Now, that was against Arizona. They're not really that good, but it was 274 freaking yards. And then he went on to have a pretty solid true freshman season. True sophomore season, he goes for 1,300 rushing yards to go along with 200 receiving yards. So he enters year three, and there was rumors that he would enter the portal. He comes back, and boom, first game, he has an ankle injury. And he plays through it, but you could see that he didn't have that same burst. So first game of the season, hurts his ankle. Last year, statistically, it wasn't all that great. But if you actually watched him, it was fine. The offensive line was terrible. He had really good quarterback play with Mendoza. And as a receiver out of the backfield, Jaden Ott is so damn smooth. Pass protector, so damn smooth. And I do think he's going to be a good running back for them. If the play calling and the offensive line play gets better, I do think it will be better for Oklahoma this year. So is the hype warranted? Sure. The issue is they lost their two big leaders on the defense. Bowman, who was an amazing safety for them, and then obviously Danny Stutzman, their superstar linebacker, who's now with the Saints. Can they find that production? I mean, they were their two best defensive players outside of R. Mason Thomas, their pass rusher. But we'll see. Let's go to Graylin. He says, Carter, do not sleep on UALR. Has a very good number one pitcher, led D1 in ERA. What the hell is ERA? ERA? The only ERA I know is Matthew ERA on social media. Led D1 in ERA. Huh? The year before Skeens transferred. So Graylin brings up a good point. He says, Carter, you don't know jack squat about baseball, which is true. Actually, that's not true. I know a decent amount about LSU baseball. I am not super-duper qualified to break down all of it because it's just, it takes up a lot of time to watch all those games. But Graylin makes a really good point. UALR has what is needed to beat LSU, which is a good pitcher. LSU's hitting has not been great. And they, of course, could shut us out again. Hitting is a weird thing. The sticks have not been sticking for LSU. I think we'll be fine. I think the bats will bat and do really well. I really do think so. Okay. So, Graylin, let me ask you this as a follow-up. Are you concerned? It seems like most LSU fans are not concerned with UALR. It would be one of, if not the biggest upset. And look, weird things happen. Coastal Carolina happened. Stony Brook happened. Weird things happen. Okay? That's baseball for you. Oh, there you go. All right, we'll do it again. Next few questions. And there you go. This actually has been a very underrated show in PHL lore. I had a really nice Timberwolves to win the championship future. It looks like that's going to end tonight.
Sam. So, yeah, it's a good question. I'm guessing you're talking more so college football playoff. I've not really done my analysis yet on that. I do think it is normally a smart thing to bet the over with Diego Pavia as your quarterback with Vanderbilt. So I kind of like that, but I do think that's a little too square to do that. So we've had that debate in the Discord, as you know. Let's go to LA Mom. What games do I think we should be the most concerned about playing in the fall? Man, there's so many of them. You know, this will be, you know, every year when you do this, there's always that one big talking point, right? And look, you look at the schedule last year, we did not play a team with a bad quarterback outside of Oklahoma. So at least we are prepared for that, right? Like, we know that week to week, it is hard to win in this conference when everybody's got good QB play. But now, what can be considered a good or a bad thing is we do have a lot of repeat QBs that we have to play. And I think that benefits LSU because you've seen them one time. You know what you're going up against, all right? So obviously you're not going to have a repeat versus Clemson, but Florida, you've played their QB. Ole Miss, new QB. South Carolina, you've played their quarterback. Vanderbilt, you've played their quarterback. A&M, you've played their quarterback. Alabama, thank God that quarterback's gone. Arkansas, you've played that quarterback. So quite a few teams where you have familiarity with the other team's QB. The thing that really stands out to me, though, LA Mom, when you're looking at the schedule, is every single quarterback outside of Alabama's with Ty Simpson, but even he to a certain extent, all of these guys can run. All of them. All right. There's not a single QB LSU plays in their P4 schedule that cannot tote it. Okay. So of those games, you know, one thing I always ask is, could you play a team with a fired coach? That ended up not happening to LSU last year, which was kind of a shock. You're not going to have any fired coaches that you play this year. I do think Ole Miss at the end of five games will be tough, right? The home team has won that matchup every time, albeit every single time. It's been a weird game, if you will. The team that you probably thought was going to win did not end up winning. So, yeah, Sam, as far as this next season is concerned, I think one bet that would be very fascinating is Ryan Williams to win the Heisman. I'm interested to see what the Alabama receiver room looks like. But I do think with Kalen DeBoer as a coach, I do think he's going to be a lot more throw-heavy. And I think Ryan Williams can get the volume to win the award. I do. And obviously we'll play in enough big games. So that's one that I would be interested in placing. Yeah, to follow up here on Amicat and Graylin, the running quarterback is why it's so important. And by the way, next week we are giving away the Ja'Marr Chase autograph uniform. Please sign up for the Patreon, because who doesn't want to win a Ja'Marr Chase autograph uniform? But yeah, it is important to have someone who can chase down quarterbacks. And we know Harold Perkins has the prerequisite speed to do so. So there you go. Big thanks to our super chatters, Alexander, Blanche. We got one in via Venmo here. And I believe, I'm guessing this is from the best ever PHL super chatter, Julie. Graylin and Sam. Dude, I'm so glad Milroe is out of here. Whew. Dear Lord. Thank God he didn't play in 2022. It is interesting, like, when you look at the Alabama matchup of the Brian Kelly era, you had arguably Alabama's best quarterback ever play his worst game versus us in 2022 because of Harold Perkins and Jarek and a few others. And then you had arguably their worst QB play his two best games versus us. Now, how does that make sense? That goes to show you how much the running quarterback has been an issue. And by the way, Milroe wasn't terrible. Okay. He wasn't there. So there you go. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! The best weekend in all of college sports is coming up. Regional weekend. You can't beat it. You literally can't beat it. Tonight we are doing bacon and eggs. Let's go.